We have been following the narrative as found in the Gospel according to Luke, and today we will hear one of the most well-known stories in the Gospels, perhaps one of the most well-known stories of all time. It is often called the parable of the prodigal son. Sometimes it is called the parable of the prodigal and his brother. I've even heard it called the parable of the foolish father. From the 15th chapter, beginning with the first three verses and then picking up at verse 11. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.'" Here ends the reading of the gospel. These words speak the power of life, and they may be trusted. Amen. Imagine you are a Pharisee living in the first century. You're a Pharisee, which means that you have some education and you have a deep love for your people. You have a deep love for your nation. You have a deep love for the spiritual life of those whom you are charged to protect. You loathe the fact that Rome is in charge. Not only is Rome in charge, they have completely corrupted the whole temple practice. The Sadducees have taken over, and they have made it into this transactional place. And so you, as a Pharisee, have decided it is so, so important for us to follow the law to the letter. Because someday that temple may not be there, and all that we'll have is the law. And our practice of this command that God has given to us so that we know how to treat our neighbors, so that we know what God requires of us. You, as a Pharisee, are so important, not just to the people of your time, you will become the ones who safeguard the Jewish tradition even until today. The Pharisees saved Judaism. So congratulations for being a Pharisee. In fact, Jesus himself, I have heard it said, was more closely aligned with the Pharisees than with any other group. You could even go so far as to say Jesus himself was a Pharisee. He believed that discerning the law and practicing the law was important. And not just passively, but fully and with your own heart. Which is why Jesus was so often at odds with the other Pharisees. Have you ever noticed how you argue with those who are closest to you? So you are a Pharisee in the first century, and you hear a party going on in the house right over there, and you wonder, why was I not invited? It's a fair question. You have an important role in that town or in that village. And so you walk over to see what all the hubbub is about, and you look in through the doorway, and you are appalled. You are appalled because there is a rabbi inside. His name is Yeshua Bar Joseph, and he is sitting there at table, not just with anyone, but get this, he is there with tax collectors and sinners. Tax collectors, the biggest sellouts of all of the Jews of the time, sold out to the Roman Empire, taking money from their own people, and he's eating with them. But not just tax collectors, all sorts of sinners. That is, people who know the law and who are breaking it every day and not doing what they need to do to get back on track. Jesus, Yeshua Bar Joseph, might notice you standing there at the doorway, and so he comes over and he says, yes? And they say, we've noticed that you not only welcome, but you eat with tax collectors and sinners. These are all of the rule breakers, he says to you, or they say to him, you say to him, these are all the rule breakers. And he says, yeah, I came to spend time with the rule breakers. I'm kind of like the shepherd who has 100 sheep, and one of them goes to stray, and I go and leave the 99 to find that one. I am like the woman who has 10 coins. She loses one. When she loses that one, she sweeps the entire house, and when she finally finds that one lost coin, she throws an extravagant party to celebrate with all of her friends. I came to spend time with the rule breakers. And let me tell you another story. Jesus says to you, you Pharisees. And so he tells the story of these two sons and their father. I would like to interpret this story today against the grain of the common interpretation. Would that be all right with you? And I am also interpreting this against the grain of the way that I have interpreted it in the past. because I heard a new word this week. Usually, we hear this story and we hear that the message is, no matter how far you have strayed from God, as long as you come around, God will always receive you back. God's love and God's mercy is always enough to gather in even the most wayward follower. Does that sound familiar? Sometimes when this story is read, it even stops halfway through. We never even hear the part about the elder son. We only hear about the so-called prodigal or wasteful son. But I want to interpret it against the grain. You see, where I went before, this was several years ago, I picked up on that one passage in there where it says that the younger son came to himself. He had lost everything. Now he's feeding pigs in a foreign country. In other words, he's as far down as a Jew could possibly go. He's in another country, not in his own country, and he's feeding pigs, which are the most unclean animal that you could imagine within Judaism. So he is at the bottom of the bottom of the bottom. He is starving, and it says that he said to himself, or he came to himself. And in the past, I had interpreted that to mean he had a change of mind and a change of heart. But I want to suggest today that the one we call the prodigal son is a scoundrel. He's a con man. And he remains a con man through the entire story. He does not come to himself and realize that he should really kind of straighten up and do things better. He starts out the story with saying to his father, I want the part of the inheritance that is mine. And a younger son wouldn't get half of the inheritance, but about a quarter or a third of the inheritance. And in asking his father for his inheritance, it was as if he was saying to his father, you are as good as dead to me. And his father divides up the inheritance, gives his younger son what he wanted, and his son says, see ya, and goes and spends it however he wants. And then he runs out of it, and then he tries to get a job, and then a famine hits, and he is there, and he is destitute. And he comes up with his next scheme. I know what I'll do. I look at my father's household, and even his hired hands are eating. I will go back to my father, and I will say, Father, I've sinned against heaven, and I've offended you. Please, take me back. Take me back to be one of your hired hands. Do you think that he expects his father to take him back as one of his hired hands? I don't think so. I think he knows his father is a big softy. And so he works out this con. He is a conniver. And so he goes back along the road, and yet something unexpected happens. The thing that's unexpected that happens is the father doesn't wait for his son to show up. His father is scanning the horizon. And when he just barely captures a glimpse of his figure on the horizon, maybe he recognizes his swagger. He can't help himself. And he runs to close the distance between him and his son. I imagine it this way. The father is coming up, and the son has been rehearsing his whole line this entire time. He says, Father, I have sinned against heaven, and I have offended you. And the father basically says, shut up and come here. And he takes him up in his arms, and he hugs him, and he weeps over him. He is overwhelmed with compassion and love for his son. Not because his son has changed a whit, but because that is the nature of this father's love. And then a party happens. It is not just a little party, it is the big one. They go and find the fatted calf, the one that has been prepared for a feast such as this. And they put a robe on him, the nice one, and they put a ring on his finger. He receives his son back like royalty, and they start partying. How do you think that younger son is feeling at that time? Boy, that worked out better than I thought it would. So often, we try to do the same thing with God. We think that if we can just be good enough or put on the right face or pray in the right way or treat somebody nicely in just the right way, we're kind of racking up points, racking up enough merit so that eventually we might earn God's love. But this first part of the parable is saying, yeah, God's love isn't like that. It doesn't wait around for you to change and be good enough. It is already running out to meet you when you are still far off. God's love and mercy is abundant and wasteful and prodigal. But there's another half to the story, right? There is an elder son who is now out in the field. Why is he out in the field? Because he's being dutiful. He is doing all of the things that he's supposed to be doing. He's working. He is doing the chores for the day that are expected of him, and he hears the partying. And he draws a little bit closer, and he's wondering what all the hubbub is about, and he calls one of the slaves over, and the slave says, well, your younger brother showed up, and so there's a big party. Can you imagine the resentfulness and the anger that he would have felt in that moment? And then we get a glimpse of it, because now the father who ran out to greet the younger son comes out to greet the elder son and says, hey, why don't you come in? Your younger brother has been lost and he's been found. And in the language in the gospel text gives us a little hint as to how to hear it. The elder son says, This son of yours went out and wasted money on unspeakable acts. And now he comes back, and you are going to throw a banquet for him? Whenever my birthday rolls around, you don't even have a pizza party for me. And now you're going to have a banquet with a band and a barbecue for him? And the father says to him, in response to this son of yours, says, your brother was lost and is now found. Everything I have is yours. Won't you come in and join the party? And the text does not tell us whether he does. And so here we are again, the Pharisees at the doorway. We've just heard Jesus' story. And now he says to us, there's enough food here. You want to come in?